Hey everyone, welcome to the Sneaker History Podcast, where we dive into the people, stories, and iconic moments that have helped make sneakers a global phenomenon. If you've ever told someone that you like their kicks, then you're in the right place. Before we lace up this episode, here's a little teaser for you. Stick around to the end of each episode for the last shot question. It's a chance to test your sneaker knowledge and engage with our community. I've also recently started a newsletter to share my knowledge from nearly two decades of experience working in the footwear industry. You can find the link to that below or go to sneakerhistory.com/newsletter for a weekly deep dive into the biggest topics in the sneaker business. All right, now that the business is taken care of, grab your favorite pair of kicks and let's get started with the episode.
Jordan trying to shake off Starks. Oh, what a move!
Against Gill, the crowd on its feet. Allen for the win!
Welcome to the Sneaker History Podcast.
What up, what up? Welcome back to the Sneaker History Podcast. My name is Nick Engvall, and I'm here with my guys, Robbie and Mike. What's going on, fellas?
Not much, man. Good to be towards the end of the week and pretty much over the NBA draft already.
Yeah, I'm just sitting over here enjoying the throwback white suit Zion wore, kind of as a memento to LeBron, but just nothing fresher than the number one overall pick wearing all white. So
yeah. So we kind of got a follow up show for the last episode because we just didn't really finish our conversation about some of the things we would like to see make a comeback. But before we get into that, wanted to shout out one of the greatest screen names I've ever seen. Nice Huge Knight for giving us a review on iTunes.
Nice Huge Knight.
I'm always
that's
just excited.
The real one.
Yeah. We appreciate everybody leaving us feedback, especially dropping us a review on iTunes. It definitely helps us grow the podcast and get more people listening and more people involved. And, that's what our goal is here, is to kind of just create the conversation and let people have somebody have something that they can talk with us and not have the kind of man behind the man kind of, I don't know if I'm saying that the right way, but you guys know what I'm saying. So we appreciate you guys taking the time and leaving us a review.
Yes, we do. Thank you, guys.
Before we get into the actual main topic, I think, obviously hit on Zion in the draft. Kind of interesting that we had the podcast episode. I don't know. It seems like it's been a while now. Basically talking about how Zion kind of left some money on the table. And when we got on the call tonight before we started recording, I mentioned a story that I was reading basically saying that Zion is like going to get somewhere in the range of $45 million. And I thought it was really interesting because both Robbie and Mike were kind of like, wow, that's it. Which I think it's a really interesting topic. I think that, as we talked about before, I do think that Zion left some money on the table by not making his deal happen before he got signed to a particular market, because I think that, as much as like New Orleans is going to be an exciting place in the next few years because of all the players that they have there, I think everybody was hoping that, not everybody, but there were a lot of people that were hoping that he would be in New York and kind of help the Knicks, get out of the gutter and have that like big market, big man again. So, I don't know. What do you guys think? I still wonder who he's going to sign with.
Yeah, he's still been floating around wearing Nikes, but you can do whatever you want when you're not signing anyone. I don't know what the original plan was, what they're going to give him, but it just seems like it all kind of went downhill once the Pelicans won the lottery. You knew he was going to that small market, and Nick, you made a good point about just, he's a big man. Like, are people again realizing, big men didn't really sell shoes? Unlike Shaq, I feel like it's a different different story because his personality was so big that he can pretty much sell anything, which he does at this point. But maybe they just don't feel like he's going to have a personality big enough to sell a shoe. So, I mean, I don't know the factors. Clearly, we're not in the room with the guys making the money decisions, but it seems weird that number's so low when everyone, you know, was thinking originally that he was going to be the biggest bidding war since LeBron. So, I don't know.
I think you can't spell Zion without Z and O. So he's going to sign with Big Baller Brand.
Oh,
man. I mean, shout out to Big Baller Brand. If y'all listening to the podcast, hit us up. You can be our first sponsor.
I held
a bar.
Nice. I mean, they were not $495 nice, but they were like $85 nice. That's besides the point, though. Like, I would love to see Zion and Nike because, you know, Nike. But growing up, man, he wore a lot of Adidas. He wore a lot of Adidas in high school. Everybody wears Adidas in the All-American game. But this everything leading up until Duke wasn't exclusively Nike. So I think that door might be more open than people are led to believe. If Nike's at, like, offering 45, it's not dumb of Adidas to offer 50. That would be a well investment. Like, I just can't stress enough. Like, personality is great, but Zion's on-court play almost makes up for a lack of verbal personality. Like, you can express yourself a lot with a basketball. And that's where I think Zion's going to excel regardless of how personable he is or where his home court is. He's going to lay out some nasty freaking dunks and block the hell out of a 7-footer being like 6'8", however tall he is. And he's just going to be so electrifying that all the marketing you need is going to be on court. Now, if he signs with Nike, that makes it even easier, you know, because they have that NBA partnership. They make pretty much everything for Nike, make everything for the NBA. If you just had some really powerful in-game moments, that would get me hyped as a consumer to go buy a pair of shoes to help me jump like Zion. Like, you could literally take the Michael Jordan angle of, like, want to be like Mike, but, like, take me to Zion. Like, Nike should give me money if they use that, but take me to Zion should be the tagline. It had the most bouncy shoes ever made, like Zoom X double stacked on the heel with like fairy dust. Like, I don't know. I don't think it matters where he plays. He's going to be so prime time.
Yeah, man. I hope he does. Oh, I wish all the best for him. Cause I love watching him, like his old high school highlights. And now, you know, when he's playing in Duke, I mean, he got me watching more college basketball just because the team was so entertaining. So hope he does well. I mean, I'm sure wherever he goes, he's going to end up, they're going to at least give it a go with a signature model. If he does go with Nike, I will say, I hope they do a little bit better job. Cause I think I told you guys this last week, I just happened to be in a finish line and like old school style, they had some of the newer releases sitting back of the counter. And I got to hold a pair of the Greek Freak ones, man in hand. They feel really like cheaply made, so I hope they don't start skimping on their. If he does go to Nike, I don't say don't start skimping on materials because they're having so many signature athletes now. So, you know, fingers crossed he gets a good deal wherever he goes, and whatever he makes is, you know, worth his star power.
Yeah, you know, I think
crazy.
Go ahead.
It's really cool. Zion Williamson is younger than the band Zion I. So if you listen to like old hip hop, that's weird to think about. But go Nick.
You made a good point, Robbie, about you know, like his on court performance, you know, speaking for itself. And I think part of this is a real kind of test for the brands and whoever signs him to think outside the box in terms of how he's marketed, because, you know, Kawhi and New Balance have successfully done it, right? Like, they've created enough buzz around Kawhi without taking away from, you know, his personality and his, you know, kind of quietness, but also, like, you know, having fun with it, making it entertaining. And a lot of times the brands are very formulaic in the way they approach things, right? They have they've figured out how to make it work, and they just continue to, you know, repeat that process over and over again with different athletes. And I think a lot of times that doesn't necessarily result in the things that you want to see. And rather than, you know, and I don't want to pick on any brands, it's just easy to point to Nike with the number of athletes that they have. But I think of the way that, let's say Isaiah Thomas. Isaiah Thomas, as a Reebok athlete, got a lot of signature stuff, a lot of like his own, you know, PE colorways, and pretty consistently showed up on the sneaker blogs before it was cool to take pictures of the guys in the tunnels before the games. Now, ever since he left Reebok and moved to, you know, Nike, he's just not as important in the big picture for them, right? And it's nothing against him. It's just that he's probably still making good money for it, and Nike's probably still selling a handful of shoes in, you know, not a handful, but a number of shoes in Washington and a number of shoes in whatever, you know, whatever team Isaiah is going to play on. And they've done that for a few years now, but he's got a great personality. And if you wanted to really elevate whatever that is, whether that's a mid-level team shoe or, you know, player exclusive KDs or player exclusive Kobe's or Kobe Protros, all that stuff, you just have to think about it differently, because every athlete is different. The shoes are no longer the biggest selling point, in my opinion. Like, the storytelling and the authentic connection between the brands and what they're doing and what that athlete is about is really, like, the key for all of these guys that have sneaker deals. You know, I think D. Wade's a great example of that. He's had basically complete, you know, freedom to do whatever he wants. Leaning has turned around and made fairly limited production runs, but crazy colorways and crazy stories to align with all sorts of different things. And it's almost as difficult to get Li Ning or, you know, Way of Wades as it is, you know, like a lot of Jordans now.
Yeah. I tried. you make a great, those are great points. And I agree. The way just the climate is when it comes to how people feel about, you know, shoes, sneakers, fashion, so on and so forth, is that I feel like sometimes, okay, LeBron, greatest player on the court right now, back in between 1985 and, well, I'd say early 2000s, people were going to buy his shoe because of his greatness. But now people, the way perception is, people want to be more like Swaggy P than they want to be more like LeBron off court. Because that they were selling, because the thing they would give him, like Adidas would give him the players' exclusive colors and all this stuff, people were more interested in Swaggy P than they were about the LeBron on court, just because it was, you know, personality. Personality was bigger. He did nothing for anyone on the court, but that personality sold everything. That his, you know, Him being a hype beast, him being, you know, self-proclaimed, like, this fashion guy. So, they just, like you guys said, they just have to sell Zion right. Like, New Balance, I haven't seen someone with just, like, pure skill and no real off-court presence get so much attention as Kawhi's gotten. And I think if that's going to be the case, they're going to try to sell him based on his performance on the court. They have to think super creative in a way to get people thinking like they used to, like, I want to buy this shoe because I want to dunk like Zion. And that's going to have to take some actual brain power, just not trying to jump onto whatever trend is going on now in whatever, you know, social media age we're in right now.
Man, Nick Young could sell. I mean, Nick Young should sponsor the United States of America, or the United States of America should sponsor Nick Young. I love Nick Young. I bought a pair of his most hated clothing line. I bought a t-shirt from it a year and a half ago now, not a couple months ago. But Nick Young could sell me dirt in the desert. I freaking love me some Nick Young, but all right, that's not important. But he
yeah, I'm with you. Nick Young is awesome. I think you made really good points about Zion and like that. Just, you know, I'm kind of repeating myself, but the on court stuff and like his just physical ability, and I think that's, you know, I'm jumping ahead, but like, go back to like the and one trash talk days, right? Get him in some trash talk t-shirts that say, it says game speaks for itself. You know, those kind of things could be really powerful for somebody like Zion, who is obviously just like so far above most of the other players that are coming into the league this year. And as nothing against those other players, it's just that he's just such a beast, man. I don't know how to explain it otherwise. Mike, you made a good point too. And, you know, thinking about Shaq, I think that Shaq kind of set the tone for athletes that knew what their value was and knew that they were more than a basketball player, and coming into the league and knowing that he was going to sign a deal with Pepsi and, you know, Reebok and whomever else, and having his own logo and all of those things that he's done. You know, like, I think that the sneaker world, we look at Shaq and we kind of discount what he's done because he sold shoes at, you know, $30 or $40 a pop through Payless Shoes and all these other like kind of, you know, entry level price points. But at the end of the day, to me, that's, you know, I mean, I was there as a kid, like that's what we got to choose from, you know, like we had a $30 limit. We weren't getting Nikes or Adidas or any brand names. And even back then there was even less access to stuff, 'cause you wouldn't have the internet. You wouldn't have, you know, you might've had an East Bay catalog and you might see something hit like a $30 price point, but it was very far down the line by the time you saw that. And a lot of times, like, you know, like I've worn a size 13 since sixth grade. So like, I haven't had, like, those sizes are gone, you know, from the very beginning. But it's interesting because Shaq's in the news too, made like some comments basically saying that, you know, his group of companies that he has now, and one of the partnerships that he has, he'd like to buy Reebok. And I mean,
that dollar money.
Yeah. What do you guys think of that?
Well, like,
go ahead.
Here's a little plug. Sneaker History had a ranking today of the 10 best debut colorways of lottery pick NBA prospects, and Shaquille O'Neal is ranked very highly on that list. So if you listen to this, go see some other people who killed it upon entering the league with their signature shoes. But Shaq, man, Shaq's been a brand since he was at LSU. Like, he probably came out of his mom as a brand. Like, that man has more charisma in his left foot than I'll ever have. Like, Shaq is one of the more powerful personalities ever. I mean, regardless of sport, you just say Shaq. That's a four-letter word. And you see his face, you think of three different things he's been associated with, and you probably have a smile or a frown if you're a Kings fan. But for the most part, it's such like a warm, happy feeling in your stomach that he must have banked on that enough to have enough money to buy Reebok from Adidas. Like, that's a point that didn't get mentioned. He would have to buy it from Adidas. So how many other former athletes would make that kind of proclamation that they want to buy their former, I guess, his former boss in a way, and actually has the money to back it up and then maybe make that big of a move? The list is really, really, really small. So all the power to him. I think the Shaq attack and the Shaq gnosis are probably two of the most, I mean, if you have 25 pairs of shoes out in front of you, those are two you're instantly going to know. Like, it's off the drop of a hat. So if he could buy the brand, great. If he could be more involved and revitalize it a little more, that'd be fantastic too. But adding Shaq to any equation, like, spells success in my book. So I would happily welcome that.
Yeah, shoot, that's awesome. Like, you can go back after all these years, like, you can go buy your sponsor. Like, you said it. How many people can say that? How many pro athletes can say that I've made it so far that I can turn back around, you know, 20 years later after I've retired and say, I'm going to go ahead and buy you, revitalize you. I think I like the fact that he stayed true to his brand. He has never swayed away from, you know, trying to get some any other deals. Like, he's done his Shaq brand at the, you know, Payless, Kmart, Walmart. But he's always stayed true to Reebok. And in there, he just said he wants to make it better because he knows that he's saying that Adidas is kind of diluting the brand and because they're not really focused on it at this point. But they also mentioned in that article that those old Reebok classics have actually been a hit among millennials, which you have to actually seen brand grow. So if he can get in there, put some more money, some more attention to it, I think he has a cash cow. I mean, why not? Like, he if he loves it, he wants to put his heart and soul into it. I should say Adidas, are you looking to divest a couple of these offset brands they're not really doing much with? I think give it to someone who cares about it.
Yeah, 100% agree. I mean, obviously, like, I'm a huge Reebok fan. There's a lot of nostalgia in that company for me. And, you know, from Iversons to the Pump Furies to just the Pump. And, I mean, I wore classics and ventilators, like, you know, when I was younger for a long time. And obviously still have, like, a pretty good size collection of Reebok stuff. I think that kind of nostalgia has a very easily determinable value. Not to throw shade at Trump and the politics stuff, but, like, you know, there's a lot of talk about his name and the value of his name on his, you know, kind of branded businesses over the years. And I think anybody with any amount of celebrity has a certain value that they think they're worth. And then there's a value that they are worth. And then there's, like, the value that I'm going to insure my, you know, legs for, or whatever that is. But to me, if you strip all that away and you just look at Shaq is absolutely going to be on TV for the next, you know, 20, 30, 40 years, assuming he stays healthy. And his fan base is not going to get smaller by any means. Like, he's really entertaining anyway. Clearly he's smart as a businessman. With Reebok, you have, you know, I think that business as a whole, if you take away the, you know, even if you take away the CrossFit stuff, right, and you just have primarily, like, classics, the classics business, which would include all of the old basketball shoes like the Shaqs and that kind of stuff, the lifestyle stuff now that's not necessarily performance. I mean, obviously there's a lot of crossover into, like, more modern styles and updates of the DMX run stuff and all of these things. But to me, there's a very clear probably value on that if you have access to the numbers. And in this day and age, it's really not that difficult to take the depth of a brand that, or take a brand that has as much depth as Reebok and turn it into something very successful, because we're at this time where, like you said, the millennials, like, younger kids are looking at places like, you know, Zara and H&M and all these, like, discount retailers, right? And not discount, but, like, just very, like, I don't know what the technical term would be, but it's almost like throwaway product, right? Like, people don't want to buy cheap disposable stuff. I think that people want to buy something. What's that?
Really cheaply made.
Yeah. And I think that we're moving into this, like, more conscious consumerism. And because Reebok has a lot of nostalgia and has a lot of depth to the brand and there's stories for days, I mean, you know, that to me is hugely valuable moving forward, because there's only so many brands that have those stories and have that kind of deeper connection and potential deeper meaning. And if he's able to pull this off through his Authentic Brands Group or whatever, whichever, I think that's the one that was mentioned, but whichever, you know, of his companies that would be interested in doing this. I think that if you're very smart about it and you're calculated about the way you approach the business, you can downsize a lot of the business that you may not be interested in and turn it into completely a lifestyle brand, like kind of tighten up the production on that specific line of stuff and move to a model where, you know, Reebok up until like this year, Reebok hasn't really done a lot of limited stuff. Even the limited stuff tends to be overproduced in my opinion. And that's something that could easily be fixed and played right in the market. And they could turn that into, you know, people wanting to wear the base, you know, the basics, right? Like the classics, you know, $30, $40, $50 shoe. And you can kind of see how to create the energy for the rest of the brand through those, like, whether that's collaborations or, you know, event type stuff. And if Reebok, if Shaq's able to do that, I mean, obviously hit us up. We'll help you out, Shaq. But I think, I think that's like a, potentially a huge, huge like success story for him. And people want to root for that. I mean, you know, rest in peace to Nipsey Hussle. He's the guy that that's kind of lived that same purpose of like, look, I rented this place and now I went and bought it. And, you know, that story resonates with so many people because so many people in this day and age, like, are a product of like our, you know, kind of society. So in the sneaker world, to be able to like really become like the only person to be able to do that. Obviously Jordan, you know, technically has his own brand, but we all know that it's a Nike brand, right? Like we know that Michael's not making, you know, a lot of the business decisions within that company. And at the end of the day, it just has the resources of Nike, you know, backing it. And it's nothing against that. It's still an amazingly successful brand that all of us love. But the story of Shaq being able to start as like, this is the first person that wrote me a check to wear their product and represent them. For him to be able to go and do that, if he's able to, becomes, I think, one of, you know, one of these success stories that gets told for the next, you know, well, I mean, climate change, we might be done in like 30 years now, but, you know, hundreds of years, right? Like this, this would be a story that people would tell as like how you want to get your business right and move towards, you know, kind of, it's like the, this is the owning your masters of sneakers.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope it does. I hope it happens. I'm looking forward to it. Yep.
Yeah. But sorry, I got a little off on a tangent there, but let us know what you think. Would you actually rock with Reebok more if Shaq bought the brand? I feel like a lot of people would.
I think so. Because he's going to promote the living daylights out of it. He's not going to just let it sit there and just kind of do what it does like naturally. He's going to push it every which way. He's going to put his son in those. He's going to be probably a lottery pick next year if he lives up to the hype. Yeah, everyone's getting Reebok.
Yeah, yep.
I've owned a pair of Reeboks since like the Nylon Classic. And we talked about this last episode. Copeland Sports probably paid $40. Only pair of Reebok I ever owned. Oh, no, I lied. I had two Iversons. But, yeah, sorry.
I need Instapump theories, but, Nick, the point you made about the shoes that are supposedly going to be limited, yeah, that Instapump theory, that prototype, they're still on the website in, like, all sizes, so I might have to, make some decisions on that here.
Yep.
Man, all we need are the yellow joints. Like the yellow ones are like the best.
Yeah, that's the one.
That's the one.
Okay.
Yeah, they're still on the site. I'm like, what?
That's dummy.
Yeah, I mean, so that kind of leads us into, I guess the same, continuing the conversation from before about like what we'd like to see kind of make a comeback or what the things that we missed from back in the day. I think, like for me, there's a lot of Reebok shoes that I think I would consider bulky. and not really like, that's really like the style of shoe that I like. I mean, I like everything, right? But like, I really loved that era of like 90s basketball, 90s trainers. And Reebok's got a lot of stuff like that, where like the DMX Run 10 is a good example. Like that came out, I think, a year or two ago for the first time in a long time, or maybe even since it released in the 90s. But what else, would be on your guys' list of like, this is the trend that we'd like to see come back?
Man, one trend I like to see come back is not even necessarily with the shoe, but it's more with the advertising. Man, I want like those kind of silly commercials to come back. I feel like the sneaker game has gotten so, you know, serious for no reason. I mean, we appreciate shoes for what they are, you know, like the materials, the technology, the stories they tell. I want to get back to those silly commercials they used to have. I mean, the last time I remember a funny commercial that, you know, intrigued me to go look more at the shoe was the Kobe commercial with all like the famous people in his seminar with like Kanye and like Serena, Aziz Ansari, and just like those little penny commercials, those Charles Barkley and, you know, telling Michael Jordan his shoes better than his commercials, just stuff like that, just making it, I guess, lighthearted again, because everything's gotten so ridiculously serious.
That's a great point. Those penny commercials, I remember those, watching them as a kid and not really getting that it's a penny commercial, but knowing that I enjoyed watching it.
Yeah.
That's how good those commercials were.
Yeah, that's a great way of pointing. That's a great point.
Like Mars and the Jordan line, that was so big that there's still Mars Blackman shoes now. Like,
yeah, I mean, it may not be good, but they're still there.
Yeah, right. no, Gwen, but like, that's a really great point, just because we don't have, many of us don't sit there in front of a TV and watch anymore. Like, that's not the way we digest marketing, really. Am I wrong?
No, you're 100% right. We want to quicken in a hurry, so we don't want to wait for commercials.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, because like now, you're better off with, you know, a meme or a quirky, you know, GIF or something like that. That's going to go further than, you know, more people are going to see that than an actual commercial, in my opinion, unless you're putting a bunch of money behind sponsoring the posts and stuff.
Yeah, but I feel like they could do the same thing with those little tidbits. I mean, if everyone's on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, it's like it's even cheaper probably, because you only have you're very like, finite amount of time to catch one's attention on those platforms. So I feel like you can do the same thing in real bite-sized form on those platforms and kind of get those same reactions, those same things. Just think about it this way. Say they release another classic penny sneaker. Want to bring back little penny? A 10-second spot where you're scrolling through Instagram, you're going to click on it, because little penny's going to catch your attention for those 10 seconds.
Yeah. I even was watching a video on throwback hoops or like NBA on ESPN, some type of a basketball account. And you watch for like 30 seconds and it gives you the option of continuing to watch. That's a really sweet feature, because I love ingesting a good minute and a half of just throwback basketball. Mm-hmm. So they could very easily utilize that same function to have a minute and a half long TV spot. Like the LeBrons was one of my favorites, the second you said that.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, like the cool LeBron. The voice he used is so funny. But that's a good pick. Like for me, mine is directly about the shoe and we'll never come back to it. Like literally never. But leather and synthetic leather. Leather. I miss having that kind of material on my basketball shoes. Like, think about the basketball shoe that captured your imagination. What was a big part material wise of that shoe?
Leather.
Probably, right? It could be some kind of mesh, it could be foamposite. But by and large, from the Air Force One to like the LeBron 7PS was the last real LeBron, like inline LeBron, to have leather on it. And those were the shoes, like the 8 and the 9 to a degree are exceptions. But those were the last LeBron you could theoretically go and play in on the court and then just walk off the court, shower, well, order of operations there, shower, walk off the court, shower, take the shoes off, probably before the shower. But you could just get yourself cleaned up and go wear those out. And that's not like out to the grocery store where you're still wearing sweats. Like you could wear a pair of those out to the movies or a date and they wouldn't look that weird. Like all the old pennies look fantastic off court. The Jordan 1 is probably the easiest example on earth. Like that shoe, because it's made of leather, translates globally, no matter what surface you're on, what you're doing. Like, Mike, you just wore the Jordan 1 on the beach. Like,
yep.
Like, a leather construction shoe, and there's, like, ethical reasons, there's production reasons, like, there's so many. I think the biggest reason is technical and performance. Like, leather doesn't hold its shape as well, and is more, you know, it's just vastly inferior to, like, I wouldn't even say hyperfuse from, like, 8 years ago. Like, leather is off the map. But I'm looking at a picture here of the Jordan Defy SD and a Victor Oladipo colorway. And it's a lifestyle shoe, but I really like it because it has a leather on the toe box and it has like real construction to it. And this basketball shoes don't do that anymore. Like I can't wear my LeBron 15s with a pair of jeans without looking like a goober. Like, and it's so yeah, that's my really long explanation of why I want leather on my shoes.
Now I think that's one of the reasons I do gravitate towards Jordan 1 more, because not only do I like the silhouette, but I do like leather on the shoes. They look more natural to wear in any other scenario other than just on court. And I like the way leather ages. And so with like, if it's a good leather on the shoes, like most of the Jordan 1s we're getting as of late, like the cut of the leather, like that, the way it's layered on each other, it just looks good after some wear and tear. And I want my shoes to look good as I keep wearing them. I don't want to have them beat and then I'm just looking like, oh, well, that was good while it lasted. Next.
I'm looking at the True Blue 3s with the Jordan Air on the back that I wore today. And I've worn them probably 10 times and they're flawlessly clean because I'm just compulsive like that. But even from here, that toe box already is bubbled as hell. And it has like the extra, you know, like when anybody who's wearing a pair of 3s, like the toe box raises and like the corners on the lateral and medial sides kind of cave in. So it looks like a clown shoe a little bit. And that part sucks, but the Jordan 3 has withstood the test of time because that leather is just sexy. That's a sexy shoe. I'm looking at it and I'm attracted to it. I'm just kidding. But like,
I love this shoe.
Jacqueline, I mean, Air Jordan 3s, I love you. I'm kidding.
I think leather's definitely, I think, on the list for me too. It is, it's good and bad, right? It's like, it's unfortunate that we're not going to see that in the way that we used to. But I think, you know, we can all agree that it's probably for the better, for the greater good. But I do think that there's some interesting stuff in the works that I'm excited to see kind of come about that could replace it. I don't know if it'll ever really, you know, kind of live up to our expectations. But I know that a couple of companies like Mercer in Amsterdam made a shoe out of pineapple leather. You know, Reebok had done, I can't remember what their Club C was made out of, but it was like a, maybe it was mushrooms or something like that. Like all these different, you know, kind of,
wow.
fly leather.
Yeah, like
Nike is a fly leather.
Yeah, everybody's kind of trying to do different things to kind of recreate that. So it'll be interesting to see how that kind of stuff progresses. Obviously, like, if you think of, you know, the only thing that I could think of that we could compare to as far as, like, our growth as, you know, human beings, I guess, would be, like, you know, the meat products and, like, the kind of replacement meat products, right? Ten years ago, maybe, you know, or more, you were basically, you'd get meat or you would get soy of some kind. Now, you've got all these varieties of, you know, jackfruit and quinoa and different rice, you know, different broccoli, like kind of patty type things where you can really create like the texture that people want as far as the food goes to replace the meat. I mean, not everybody's really cares about that, but if you've ever had like an Impossible Burger, it's really hard to tell the difference between a regular burger and an Impossible Burger. And I think that like as those things kind of continue to grow, stuff like this in like the product development side of things will also, you know, because part of what I think with that stuff is that we moved to a place where I remember like the very first time I wrote about a pair of vegan Air Max 90s. This is probably 11 or 12 years ago now. And I kind of like was confused by it because, okay, yeah, it's vegan, but basically it's all synthetic. So it's all variations of plastic, which, okay, you made a vegan shoe, but the product itself is not recyclable. It's a terrible, it's terrible for the environment. So, you know, people aren't thinking about both sides of that equation and, or they weren't. And now I think it's something that a lot of people are thinking about and, you know, it's expensive at first, but as people test the waters and figure out things that work better, you know, hopefully we get an actual like good quality replacement for leather that we all can kind of be excited about. Cause I do, I'm the same way, man. Like when I look at, especially, you know, those like older shoes or, you know, Jordan 1s that have the good leather on them, Jordan 3s, like those shoes that you're just like, damn, like, you know, got you feeling some type of way.
Romance. Hey, I just want to take a moment to acknowledge the fact that before I had my chicken Samoas, I had vegan, like soy-based chicken nuggets. So they're delicious. I really had no point to what we're talking about. Definitely substitute chicken with some kind of vegetable, plant-based alternative, and I guarantee you won't tell the difference. Because chicken nuggets are made with beef, so.
Actually, it's kind of funny because like this is not the direction I thought we'd be taking tonight. But if you are like a chicken nugget or a you know kind of a wings person, I highly recommend the Morningstar like buffalo wings fake chicken nuggets. Those things are like crack, man. I don't know what is in them. They kind of are like chicken nuggets, but they're like buffalo flavored. They're so good. I could eat them every day.
I gotta try them.
Don't get it twisted. I had Buffalo Wild Wings last month. And I've had chicken wings. I mean, sometimes I wake up in the middle of the night and it's just in my hand. I didn't even make it. That's how much I love chicken wings. I fight. They're all around me. So, but mix it up, you know.
Yeah, but you live in Portland, so that means you got to know the name of the chicken and how it was raised and all that, like Portlandia, right?
Man, you made friends with it first.
Yeah. That's exactly how it goes. menus will say where the chicken's from, and I think that's kind of cool. And, like, the chicken fingers, they're never those really big, like, mechanically engineered chicken breasts where it's like, there's no fucking chicken that's, like, this big.
Dude, he's swole, bro. Like, he's on steroids.
Right? Chicken's yoked out. Did he eat it? Damn. But no, they're very normal, fashionable little chicken fingers. So I just called chicken fashionable. So we need to stop.
Oh yeah. So shifting gears. So one of the other things that I actually like miss quite a bit was the kind of crossover between like mainstream. I've been thinking about this actually since the last time we recorded. The crossover between mainstream shoes and like turf shoes or cleated shoes. Like, it's cool to see, you know, these guys we've talked about before. It's cool to see these guys throwing cleats on, you know, their Nigel Sylvester ones or their Jeter ones and stuff like that. Kobe's, like, I love seeing all that stuff, you know, on the pros. But what I actually miss is the brands used to take a shoe. Like, I mean, Jordan does it, right? Like with some of the stuff, occasionally they'll bring out like threes or sixes or something that are cleated, or 11 cleats for golf. But a lot of the brands used to do that kind of stuff. I mean, I have a pair of, you know, Iverson Answer 4s that are like a turf shoe, a molded turf shoe.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
That's so dope.
I'll post them up on my Instagram when this goes up. But yeah, there used to be so much crossover, you know, like people would make trainers out of the cleats that the pros were wearing and vice versa. So you saw a lot of, you know, basketball shoes turned into football shoes. Like the Iversons that I have are actually, you know, turf for football. They were made for the NFL athletes. So that's something that I think is missing. There's a lot that kind of came from that. You know, I think of like, obviously the Griffies, but like Big Hurt on the Reebok side, obviously Iverson, but you know, like Kenny Lofton with the Cleveland Indians had super dope cleats. And I think they came back for like one year, or they came out one year as a turf version that you would buy, you know, like Deion Sanders, obviously Barry Sanders in the turf shoes, those kind of things. You could see how the athletes were.
Griffey.
Yeah. The athletes were such superstars that the footwear could translate to other sports and other, you know, areas. So that's definitely something that I miss.
If anybody's in the market, the Nike sale going on right now, the clearance sale, there's a pair of 11 cleats. They're like Columbia 11s, but in cleat form.
They're so like $70, aren't they? They're pretty cheap.
You can do a soul swap, or you could be like an 8-year-old and walk through the grocery store with your cleats on.
And everybody clank.
Well, worth the child or the girl.
That is cool. Like, I remember looking at, old like football pictures every so often, and it's so cool to see like the guys wearing. There's a turf shoe, but it looks like they're just wearing a sneaker. Like I've seen there were guys like wearing, you know, Jordan 14 like turf conversions, and I wonder what happened. Did the NFL just say, "Hey, no more of this. It's not safe," or the quick deal that happened?
I mean, I think there's a lot of things like the what does the NFL call it? Spats, right? Spatting or whatever, like where they're wrapping everything. I mean, I think there was a lot of challenges for the NFL or for the athletes that were sponsored in the NFL to like get enough exposure to show what they were wearing. So you had like a handful of people that were like, okay, I'm not going to tape up today and I'm going to wear like what I want to wear. But the league itself obviously is, still very close-minded when it comes to dress code and stuff like that. So a lot of these guys, yeah. even I don't remember the last time I saw it, cause I honestly haven't watched a lot of football in recent years, but like, I remember seeing guys like wearing customs and getting fined, and it's like, man, we're past that. You know, like you gotta be open-minded about this stuff, because this helps your business grow. Like sneakers is bigger than any one particular sport, in my opinion. And as the business of sneakers grows, and as more and more people own more and more pairs of shoes, it's what draws people. I mean, we've talked about it before, but like a guy like PJ Tucker can be a legitimate star because of his sneakers. You know, like, I mean, not that he's not a good player, but people pay attention to him because of his sneakers, not because of his on-court performance.
You're 100% right on that.
I have to say, though, that they have, since you don't watch a lot, like Mach Customs is like the official customizer of like most of the Minnesota Vikings.
Mm-hmm.
So it's opened up a lot more. Like I know he works with Stephon Diggs on customs every week. Like literally Stephon wears a Mach custom every week. But
that's awesome.
They're primarily Vikings colors during the regular season, unless it's a holiday. That's when they open it up a little bit. But it's a lot more open now than it was. Nice. And I'm going to search here real quick. I mean, he has like Starbucks cleats. Has ever heard like Starbucks? Yeah, it's so dope. Like a Starbucks. This Mosh does such a good job. You have to go look it up. I can't describe it very well. But like a Randy Moss cleat, it's all in Viking colorways. This money looking one has like coins for Mario, but it's like Viking color. So they've opened up what they can do, but within confines. But you can still do some amazing work, like really, really cool stuff. So
yeah,
not so bad.
I have seen a few of those like pop up on the sneaker blogs for sure.
Hot fire. Dylon, Stefan, Dylon.
So before we get out of here, let's go one more thing each as to what you're missing and or what you'd like to see come back.
I got it. The perfect one. Again, it has nothing to do with exactly the shoe, but just kind of the mindset. I want to see people get excited about buying a new pair of shoes again, so much so that they walk out the store with a new shoe on. Because I still do it every so often when I'm just super hyped about something I picked up. And I get funny looks from like other people in the store and like the person helping me. I think people used to do it all the time. I think it was cool. And now it's seen as just like a trading piece or like just a show piece or, you know, something not to crease. I'm like, dude, I just bought this because I wanted it. Put it on my feet now, put my old shoes in the box, get out the store. I just think that's such a cool thing. Maybe that's a kid in me. I don't know, but that's just something I miss.
I dig that.
I can 100% stand behind that.
Yep.
Nick, you go, because I'm blanking right now, so I need like another like 20 seconds.
So.
Unless you were blinking too, and I'm really sorry.
Yeah, no, I mean, I kind of am, but I was actually going to say, like, you know, we kind of hit on the commercials, but one of the things that I miss is, and obviously this would be hard to make happen, but a lot of the old advertisements that were in the magazines, you know, like there was such creative stuff coming out in the 90s, 80s, 90s, you know, even early 2000s, where you had stuff like, I think of like the 800 numbers with Nike or the cartoons that Nike did for, you know, Chris Webber, Tim Hardaway, Charles Barkley, the Godzilla type stuff. There was so much out there where, I mean, you think about that and we're in this weird spot where, not weird, it's just new, but it used to be that you could have somebody drop something and it was going to go into a print magazine and it would go through, you know, it would go, let's say 100,000 copies of that magazine would get printed and it would end up everywhere. And then it would end up in posters, you know, on the bus stops and around the country. And now I feel like there's less effort and less quantity of people doing creative stuff to market for the brands, you know, because it all goes on to social media. That disappears so quickly that there's no, you know, it's like a day or two or a week maybe, or you promote the post for 30 days and people work on this like cycle that, I don't know, I feel like it you know, kind of like
it's cheapened.
Like, yeah, it like cheapens and dumb,
it's not
dumbs,
tangible anymore.
Yeah, it like kind of dumbs down what people are looking to create because, you know, they're so limited in what they could do, probably working at the brands and having a budget and all that stuff. But at the end of the day, like those types of things are not memorable. Like it's rare that we could look at an Instagram post and think, damn, I really like that picture compared to the other 40 pictures of that shoe or 40 pictures we see in that day or hundreds that we see in that day. So nothing can stand out where if they had more of a longer term concept to push a product, I'd like to see that again. I think that there are ways to do it to make it successful. You know, and maybe this is just me like, and like, you know, magazines and books being like my real kind of passion and the nostalgic piece of that wanting to see that come back. But I just feel like the kind of advertising side of things, not just like the commercial side, but like the actual advertising side of things, has gotten a little stale or repetitive.
Yeah. Well, it's crazy. So when you brought up, you know, the old ads that had the Nike phone number, this is so in the pair of the Air Max 97, the kind of tribute they did to the Royal Foam Posite 1. This, I can't believe like every sneaker blog I looked at has not mentioned this detail. And it's one of the reasons I try not to wear them that much. I don't want to mess up the insole. But the insoles of each pair are, they're like the old, they have the phone numbers in Nike factory printed all through the, like in the insole, where it's like the old ad for the Foam Posite 1, you know, having Foam 1 and it had the phone number, then you can call it to Nike headquarters.
That's awesome.
So I was really like, I feel like those are things that we should be talking about more, those kinds of old print ads. Those are some of the coolest things I remember seeing. And when you said that, it made me think of that shoe and how no one ever spoke about that, how it should be due not just to the phone, but actually to the print ad for it.
Yeah, that's definitely a good point. I wonder if even, because I was just thinking about, you know, my girlfriend Cam works at Glossier, right? And they are like the supreme of the you know, kind of skincare, beauty, makeup world. But they don't actually even have phones. Like, you can't even call the store. So I wonder if a lot of, you know, like, I feel like a lot of brands are kind of going to that approach where it's like, customer service gets funneled into a different place. You know, we're cutting back on all these like kind of more difficult to manage, like, you know, avenues to get in touch with the brand.
That's crazy. That's like getting in touch with the brand. You got to be in touch with the people. I mean, that's a whole different story for a different day, but I feel like you got to brand staying in touch with the people, both by, you know, communications, by, you know, those print ads, those television ads, those whatever internet ads, and that's how you get business, and that's how you stay in the forefront of someone's mind. So, man, I've always been a fan of magazines as well. So I'm right with you on this one.
All right, Robbie.
Man, so rapid fire answer. I'm on NBA socks to come back, like the really old puffy ones, like the one that Kobe would wear, and they'd like puff up around his ankles.
Yep.
I wore more. Say they were like as thick as like hiking socks, but I really don't have a whole topic off of that. It's just a fact. I like those. My big thing I would bring back would be releasing shoes like the Kobe 4, like Carpe Diem I'm looking at here, that the players actually wore on the court, like LeBron and Kyrie, pretty much every athlete right now wears PEs that we will never see, or we can maybe go replicate to a degree on my Adidas or Nike or Nike ID, but every Jordan retro that he wore is so powerful because he wore them. The Kobe 4 is so powerful to me personally because I saw him wear all of them. I saw him lose to the Celtics in probably the best Kobe shoe ever. Like, the 4 finals is up there for me. Like, I have so many strong ties to the colorways that makes me want to buy the colorways. And if I never see the athlete have a really outstanding performance in the shoe, it makes me less inclined to want to spend on it. Like, I literally think I'm going to hit my plug up and have him buy these for me, like, half an hour from now. I need these. Because, like, I can just see Kobe wearing all black and just, like, in the post, with his great footwork, wearing these shoes. And it's just, it's a really kind of fanboy happy moment in my life. But I want to see debut shoes or just normal colorways on the feet of more athletes.
Yeah, I dig that. Go. I'd like to see that too.
Me too.
All right, so let's get out of here. Let's hear from you guys. What do you want to see make a comeback? What are you missing? Obviously, we went through a lot of stuff and there's so much more to go through, but we want to hear from you. Like, what do you guys miss? What do you want to see these brands come back with, or maybe even stuff that you just don't want to see ever again. But that pretty much wraps it up for this episode. You can follow myself, Nick Engvall, on all platforms. More importantly, follow at Sneaker History on all platforms. And why don't you guys let them know how they can catch up with you?
Yeah, you guys find me, Sneaker History. You guys find me on Instagram, Twitter, under MadWatcher789. And yeah, man, just come leave us your feedback. Let us know what you guys think. We love to hear from you guys and speak a little bit more of your feelings about the sneaker culture. Robbie, where do we find you, man?
Find me eating some cookies that are not gluten-free or vegan in about 15 minutes. So after that, you can find me at RAHBEE702 on Instagrammers.
Those Instagrammers.
Yep. All right. Well, thanks for all of you for listening, and we'll catch you next time. Peace.
See you.
Bye now.
What up, y'all? This is Nick again. Before you take off, I want to ask a few favors of you. First off, if you're still listening, I wanted to thank you for supporting us and continuing to listen to our podcast. If you're enjoying it, and I'm going to assume that you do if you're listening this long, please take a couple of minutes, head over to iTunes, drop us a review, leave a comment, make sure you're subscribed. It's the only way that we can really continue to grow our audience and reach new people and continue to grow the podcast. Second thing is, if you haven't already, head over to sneakerhistory.com/shop. You can pick up t-shirts, coffee mugs, stickers, and some other miscellaneous things. And all of these things go to help us continue this podcast and continue the site and just pay for miscellaneous expenses that come up. We're not trying to make a killing off of it, but it would be awesome to have your support. And who knows, maybe run into one of you on the streets one day rocking a Sneaker History t-shirt. Thanks again, and we'll catch you next time. Peace. Hey, Nick here again. Before you take off, I want to thank you for listening to the Sneaker History Podcast. Be sure to hop into our Discord to answer this episode's The Last Shot question and get to know our community of sneaker enthusiasts. If you'd like more insights on the trending topics in the sneaker world, I've also recently started a newsletter to share my knowledge from nearly 2 decades of experience working in the footwear industry. You can find the link to that below or go to sneakerhistory.com/newsletter. And last but not least, tell someone you like their kicks today. You never know how far a simple compliment can take you, and we all know how good it feels to be on the receiving end of some appreciation. Thank you for all the support, and we will catch you on the next episode. Peace.